Hey, everybody, my name is Tim Seneff. Hey, Mason. Hey, Florence. Hey, Oakley. And it's fantastic to be here with you today. I'm one of the pastors here at Crossroads where I have the opportunity to lead our reach out team. And our reach out team is the team that takes all the ways that you invest in Crossroads with your money and your time and your expertise, and we funnel that to go be a blessing outside of Crossroads, overseas in India, where we help rescue girls from forced prostitution and help rehabilitate them back to wholeness. And in South Africa, where we work with some great partners to help stem the tide of HIV/AIDS and poverty. And in New Orleans, where we just had that fantastic group come back and have spent a lot of time helping to rebuild that Katrina-ravaged city. So we've done a lot of work outside of Cincinnati, but Reach Out's also the group that mobilizes you to be a blessing inside our city as well with various once-a-year serving projects like Go Cincinnati and Thanksgiving Food Drive, Fall Feast, Angel Tree, also things that are weekly, things like Whiz Kids and Habitat, Diner, Outlet, Foster Care and Adoption Ministry. And so I got to tell you, I got the best job in the world. I really, really do. And I've been on staff here for almost 10 years, and so I'm becoming a bit of an old-timer around here. In fact, just to give you some perspective, 10 years ago, there was no Mason, there was no Florence, the Oakley Auditorium was a third of the size, and Brian Tome was still wearing denim button-down shirts. It's true. It's true. And 10 years ago, I actually had hair. Yes, I did. So check that out. I mean, it has been a follically challenging decade for me here on staff. My goodness. Now here's a more recent photo of our family. You can see that we like to have fun. My smoking hot wife, Mary, been married 16 years, and our kids, Hannah, Leah, and Jeremiah. So that's us, and I'm really happy to be here with you. If you have joined us for the first time, you are entering a series here that's called God Is, and we're looking at filling in that blank with various mind-blowing, stereotype-altering attributes of God that many of us have missed. And 2 weeks ago, Chuck Mingo kicked off the series talking about how God is otherworldly, how while he absolutely desires to be in relationship with us, in his essence, he is completely different and separate and holy. And last weekend, Stephen Manuel talked about how God is a street fighter. How strong was that? Stephen Manuel, amazing, amazing. And so today we're going to continue in this series looking at who God is. But before we dive in, let's open in prayer. God, I thank you for this day and for people who have invested time to come here and learn more about who you are. And God, I pray that you would use my words to be helpful in that process, and we wouldn't just understand it with our minds, but we would apply it to our lives. And I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, I said I love Shark Tank, and part of that is because I'm fascinated by the sharks, the venture capitalists, how they can help make dreams a reality. And for some of you, when I use the term venture capitalist, your mind goes right to Mark Cuban on Shark Tank. Others of you say, Tim, I have no idea what a venture capitalist is. Well, I've done a bit of research on venture capitalism over the last few weeks, and here's a quick definition of venture capitalism. Venture capitalists invest in early stage, high potential, high-risk startup companies in the hopes of earning a significant investment. Now, many of us are familiar with traditional investing. Maybe you have a 401k, maybe you have an IRA, or you've invested in a mutual fund. Venture capitalism is very, very different. And so here's a little table to help us understand the difference. Now, in traditional investing, the amount of money that you invest is average to small. But in venture capital, it's large. Traditional investing, the portfolio is diversified, but venture capital, it's unbalanced. You're pushing all your chips in. Traditional investing, the risk tolerance is low, but venture capital, it's high. You're making a $100,000 million investment, that's big risk. The expected return with traditional investing is slow, steady growth. You're just hoping for 5, 10% growth, but in venture capital, you want aggressive, exponential hockey stick growth. Most venture capitalists are hoping for a 10x return, sometimes 100x. Traditional investing also, they invest based upon historical performance, while venture capitalists, they invest based upon future potential. And one of the most well-known venture capitalists is Stanford professor Dr. David Sheridan. Now, as has been well documented over the last few decades, some of the most successful startup companies have come out of Silicon Valley in California, right near Stanford, tech industry. And so many of these have been Stanford graduates, some of them, frankly, Stanford dropouts. And Dr. Sheridan has gotten to know them when they were no names, when people didn't know who they were. And so his most famous investment was back in 1998 when he was approached by two nerds, Larry Page and Sergey Brin. They had this idea they pitched to him about how an algorithm that they had developed would change the game and how internet searches happen. It was this never-before web startup company called Google. Yes, Google. And so back in 1998, Dr. Sheridan invested $100,000. Do you know how much that venture capital investment is worth today? It's worth over $1 billion in Google stock. Professor billionaire Dr. Sheridan, I got to tell you, I'm in the wrong job. You are in the wrong job. Unless you're a venture capitalist. If so, give me a call. I'd love to talk. But I personally am fascinated by venture capital, not just because it seems like it's a way you can make a ton of jack, but also because at my core, I'm an entrepreneur. You see, when I look back on my life, I see how in high school, college, even today, I've always been part of new ventures. Back in high school, I was part of a lawn mowing business that I started for myself. My best friend and I in college, we started a painting business. And for both of those ventures, venture capital was needed. Now, it did not take the form of a $100,000 check from Dr. Sheridan. As a kid, who do you think my venture capitalists were? Right, mom and dad. Parents, you understand this, that kids are a financial black hole. Am I right? And so back in college, we had this college painting business, and the venture capital that my parents put in came in the form of a conversion van that we used to lug ladders around town. Now, here's a photo of our conversion van. Is that the 80s or what? What a great decade. Not. So you can see there, my socks are basically hiked up past my knees. I promise it was cool at the time. My dad's got like the blue blockers on or something. I don't know what's going on there. And conversion vans, I don't know if they even still make those anymore, but we used that to haul our ladders around for a number of summers in college. We employed a bunch of high school students, and we did pretty well. No, actually, we killed it. We did really well and made some really good college spending money. So that was my college new venture. When high school, I started my own business for myself to cut grass of different lawns of our neighbors. And venture capital from my parents took the form of a lawnmower. And so here's a photo of myself when I was in high school. Yes, I was cooler then than you have ever been. Or at least I thought I was, because I was wearing the gold chain. And so I was mowing yards, and my parents put in venture capital of a lawnmower. But I also thought I was too cool for school there because my parents also invested a venture capital investment of me with one of these. All right, if you're a child of the 80s, who had one? A yellow Sony Sports Walkman. And if you didn't have one, you know that you wanted one. It auto reverse, it had the mega bass. This thing was awesome. And so I just popped that right there on my pants, right? And I'd pop in one of my favorite cassettes. And so as I was mowing yards, I could listen to any number of my favorite 80s or early 90s tunes, including this one. Oh, yeah. Come on, the lawnmower. The running man. Oh, my goodness. Listen, I know some of my friends are out there, and I've heard friends don't let white friends dance on stage. I mean, come on, friends. But seriously, though, Chuck Mingo, he's always up here singing, he's dancing, and I figured for all of the 80s white rapper wannabes out there, I had to represent. Oh, my goodness. Oh, where the heck was I? Okay, oh yeah. Well, I'm personally passionate about venture capital. Well, even in the role I have here at Crossroads, I've had a ton of opportunity to be part of new startups, things like Go New Orleans and Go Cincinnati, and the work we're doing in India and South Africa. And for all of these efforts, you may not know it, but you have served as venture capitalists in me. And in Crossroads, you've invested money, you've trusted us with vacation time, and we've been working hard to earn you a return on your investment. So venture capital has been close to my heart, as has this sense of adventure and new territory that comes with it. But it wasn't until recently that I realized that, in fact, God is also a venture capitalist. It's true. God is a venture capitalist. When you look at the Bible, you see story after story about how someone that's improbable, God chooses to invest in them, despite all the risk, put all his eggs in their basket with a huge venture capital investment. And sometimes, in many instances, it takes years to materialize, sometimes decades, even generations. And one of the craziest stories that illustrates this principle that God is a venture capitalist is the Old Testament story of a woman named Rahab. Now, Rahab lived in a part of the world called Canaan in a city called Jericho. And many archaeologists believe that Jericho is the oldest walled city in antiquity. And Rahab lived actually in a home in that wall. And so it may have looked something like this rendering. And so here's a little Bible lesson for those of you who are not Old Testament scholars. So the nation of Israel, God's chosen people to reflect who he is to the rest of the world, they're down in Egypt, they're enslaved with Pharaoh, and they're released from that oppression. It's the whole Prince of Egypt thing, and they go into the desert where they wander for 40 years. They're there led by Moses, or as Brian Tome likes to refer to him as Charlton Heston. So Charlton Heston is leading the nation of Israel in the desert, and he decides to pass the leadership baton to Joshua. And so Joshua, in his first leadership move, he kind of takes stock of where everything is, and he says, all right, guys, listen. So we've been here for 40 years wandering around the desert, and I got to tell you, this place sucks. It's terrible. I mean, it's hot, and there's sand everywhere, and all we ever eat is these frosted flakes they call manna. And what's worse is that I hear that just across the Jordan River on the west side is the promised land. That sounds great. I mean, they've got milk. They've got honey. And so he says, we got to get over there. So listen, come here. Everybody come here. Now I want to choose you and you. I want to send the two of you over across the Jordan River. I want you to check out Canaan. Check out Jericho. I want to see what our competition is. Let me know, what are they bench pressing? What's their 40 times? Come back and let me know, what's our competition look like? And so we pick up this story in the Old Testament book of Joshua, chapter 2, verse 1. Then Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim. Shittim. I would have left there too. Go, look over the land, he said. I mean, it probably smelled terrible, especially Jericho. So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. So Joshua, he sends these spies to Canaan, to Jericho, and they hole up in this home of this woman named Rahab. And what's fascinating to me is her profession, not necessarily the profession of champions, not Rahab the doctor, the teacher, the attorney, Rahab the harlot. And one scholar, Dr. Phyllis Bird, comments, as a prostitute, Rahab was a marginal figure in the society, tolerated, but despised. Some commentators even believe that Rahab was forced into prostitution by her family as a means simply to put food on the table, much like many of the stories that we hear from girls in India, the ones that we have the privilege of serving. And so the fact that God chooses Rahab, the unlikeliest of characters, helps to illustrate the fact that God is a venture capitalist first because God invests in the improbable. God invests in the improbable. A prostitute? Seriously? But we see this throughout the Bible. God chooses to invest in this guy named Jacob, one who tricked his dad into receiving his blessing instead of his brother Esau. God invests in that guy, Jacob, to become the founder of the nation of Israel. Improbable. God invested in this guy named David, a man who slept with a woman who wasn't his wife and then sent her husband off to the front line of battle to be killed as a way to cover up his adultery. God invested in that David to become the greatest king that Israel had ever known. Improbable. in the New Testament, God invested in this guy named Paul, who at the time was the greatest persecutor of Christians in his day. God invested in him to become the greatest ambassador of Jesus in the world's history. Improbable. And we see throughout the Bible story after story of improbable people that God invested in, people like Joseph and Gideon, Moses and Mary. God has a track record of investing in the improbable because God is a venture capitalist. And like a venture capitalist, God sees potential in people that no one else sees potential in, and he chooses to make an investment in them. And thank God that he does that. Thank God that he chooses to invest in the improbable, because that means that he chooses to invest in me. And that means he chooses to invest in you. Regardless of the dumb stuff we've said, regardless of the stupid stuff that we've done in our life, God chooses to invest in us. And that is good news. That is good news. I've heard it once said that God does not call the qualified, he qualifies the called. And that's absolutely been true in my life. You know, one of the most poignant examples in my life that illustrates the fact that God is a venture capitalist and he invests in the improbable is the story of CityLink. You see, I've got a lot of history with CityLink. I've been on the board for the last 9 years, serving with some amazing servants and great leaders, people like Kirk Perry and others. I've had the opportunity to chair the board the last 6 years, and so I've had a very, very up-close and personal view of CityLink. Now, for those of you who don't know what CityLink is, it's an integrated campus of care where the working poor can come and have the trajectory of their lives changed by having access to a variety of services all in one place. Things like employment assistance and education, transportation, health and wellness, budgeting for money that they may never have had before, counseling services. They can also get spiritual support. And we do that by partnering with some of the city's finest social service agencies, organizations like Cincinnati Works and Smart Money, Cincinnati State and Cincinnati Public Schools, Changing Gears. We also have seven partners that are visiting partners that come in and teach a variety of seminars. It's a physical center that's located near downtown in the West End. And if you don't know much about the CityLink story, you would probably think that with a mission that compelling, with partners that amazing, with an activistic church like Crossroads behind it, that thing would be a slam dunk. Well, you'd be dead wrong. Because for the vast majority of CityLink's 10-year history, CityLink being successful was about as likely as the Bengals winning the Super Bowl this season. Now, listen, I'm not a hater, but I looked up the Vegas odds, and the Vegas odds of the Bengals winning the Super Bowl this season are 35-1. And some of you seem excited about those odds, but I'll tell you, actually, I think we got a good team this year, but I'll tell you that for the majority of CityLink's history, our Vegas odds would have been about 35,000-1. You see, it seemed improbable with city council. It seemed improbable with zoning in the courts. It seemed improbable with the neighborhood. Recently, I went through a scrapbook that we had kept. We had taken a bunch of newspaper headlines, and we clipped those out, and I distilled those down just to a few of my favorite, just to share with you some of the improbability that CityLink had. Let's take a look at some of those. City council vote opposes CityLink. Zoning board nixes CityLink proposal. West End residents oppose CityLink. It's time again to fight off CityLink. And my personal favorite, CityLink's patronizing approach, insulting. I mean, don't mince words. Tell us how you really feel. I mean, geez. You may not know that Crossroads was actually picketed 5 separate times because of our involvement with CityLink, including on the night of the Oakley prayer and dedication service of the new auditorium. And so I was pretty new in my job. And I remember being out in the atrium, and somebody tapped me on the shoulder, and they said, "Hey, Tim, there's some protesters here. They got the whole NOTA, CityLink, picket signs and all." Now, keep in mind, this is probably the biggest night in Crossroads history, probably the biggest night in the ministry career of Brian Tome. And so I remember thinking, oh, I'm getting fired. I'm absolutely getting fired. But thankfully, I did not. But after all these headlines, after city council voted against CityLink 8-1, after I was vilified in blogs and our board was beaten down and discouraged, I remember I hit my lowest. Friends had told me to pack it up and quit. I had people sit me down and say, Tim, every power player in the city is dead set against this thing happening. You should just move on and try to do something else. And I really hit my lowest when I came back from a really difficult neighborhood meeting. And I remember coming home, and I kind of threw my computer bag down on the ground, and I kind of slouched down in the couch, and I hung my head. And Mary, my wife, said, wasn't a very good meeting, huh? I said, no, it was terrible. And she said, Tim, do you think CityLink's ever going to happen? I said, well, Mary, everyone's telling me to quit. I'm not going to quit because I really just want to save face. At this point, it's just about pride for me. But maybe if I can string it out for a while, I'll keep my pride. But I got to tell you, I don't think that CityLink is ever going to open its doors. I really don't think we're ever going to ultimately help people. See, CityLink for many, many years was the definition of improbability. God was investing, though, in the improbable. But I think not only about how improbable CityLink was, but I think about how improbable I was and how improbable I am. A kid who, growing up, just wanted to make a ton of money and live a safe, comfortable life rather than actually making a difference in people's lives. And once I did make that turn, the pendulum swung the whole opposite way, and I cared for many years more about investing in the lives of people outside my home rather than investing in the people I love most inside my home. A pastor who can be so focused on activity for God that I miss relationship with God. Listen, I don't have the resume. I don't have the credentials. I have absolutely no business helping to lead CityLink. I don't. I have no business helping to lead Reach Out. I absolutely don't. But thankfully, God simply doesn't invest in the improbable. We also see that he is a venture capitalist because God is faithful through our fears. Secondly, God is faithful through our fears. He rides the roller coaster with us through all the changes and through all of our tough times. And so let's pick this story back up of Rahab and Joshua, chapter 2, verses 2 through 5. The king of Jericho was told, look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab, bring out the men who came to you and entered your house, because they have come to spy out the whole land. But the woman Rahab had taken the two men and hidden them. And at this point, you can almost see the beads of perspiration appearing on Rahab's forehead. You can see her face go flush and her voice starts to crack as she conjures up this false story. It continues. She said, yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they had come from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, they left. I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them. A narrow escape, not just for the spies, but for Rahab too. And the story continues. After the goons leave that the king of Jericho had sent Rahab, she recognizes that the writing is on the wall. And so she goes back, she scurries to where she had hidden the spies, and she says, listen, we need to make a deal. I know that your people are going to come, you're going to ransack our city, and so I need you to save me. For all of my faithfulness to you, I need you to rescue me. And the spies agree, and they said, here's the deal. What we need you to do is we need you to put a scarlet cord out your window so that when we come, we will see that cord, we will rescue you, and we'll save you. And D-Day comes. The Israelites, they cross the Jordan River. They march around Jericho 7 times. The walls come down, and the city is obliterated. The people demolished. It's scorched earth. It's shock and awe. And yet, despite all of the fears that Rahab had, God was faithful in those fears. He was faithful in the midst of that. And similarly, owners of new startup companies would tell you that they've got a lot of fears. Statistics show that often the first 3 to 5 years of a new venture, they're typically operating in the red. They can't get into the black. And so often during that early stage, entrepreneurs, they're thinking, this is so stupid. Why did I ever do this? We're never going to make any money. We're never going to make it into the black. But if a venture capitalist is patient and keeps their eye on the prize, a big payday down the road, they will remain faithful in the midst of the fears of the entrepreneur that they have invested in. And the same is true of God. When I look back on CityLink's history, I see time and again how God was faithful in the midst of our fears. I remember thinking, we don't have enough money to pay for attorneys to maintain the zoning that's legally ours. Bam! God was faithful. He raised up a very generous Crossroads attorney who did it pro bono. I remember thinking, we don't have the right staff to lead this thing. Bam! God brought the exact right staff, our executive director, John Mark Outerslice, and an amazing core of folks with a variety of backgrounds and talents that are diverse. I remember thinking, we don't have the right partners to lead this thing, to help actually care for this new target demographic, the working poor. Bam! God brings the exact right partners for this thing to happen. I remember financially, we thought, we're never going to raise the millions and millions of dollars it's going to take to build this building. We conducted this feasibility study where we commissioned a firm to go out and to talk to donors and see how feasible it was to raise these millions of dollars. And so they summarized their multi-month research in a 19-page report, and you can summarize those 19 pages into two words. They said, not feasible. And I remember our board, we were thinking, how are we ever going to raise these millions of dollars? Bam! God was faithful. He used Crossroads and many of you, other individuals and churches, other corporations and foundations to be generous, to help raise the money. I remember talking with Brian one time when I was deep in my fears, and he said, Tim, God's faithful. He said, look at the Bible, and aside from Jesus' miracles, there was never one single time when God's purposes were advanced without struggle, without adversity. See, God was faithful through our fears, and so this past fall, despite all odds, the improbable happened. God was faithful, and CityLink opened. And here's a photo of our dedication night. It was incredible. It was incredible. It was one of the best nights of my life. And if you're a game change giver here, I want you to feel a deep sense of joy that you were a part of CityLink happening. Absolutely. I know my wife and I, for all the financial investment we've made in Crossroads, it brings me great gratitude to see how God has been faithful through my fears and all of our fears. And if you're struggling to continue to fulfill that commitment, I just want to encourage you, God will stay faithful through your fears. So God is a venture capitalist, and he doesn't, though, simply invest in the improbable, nor is he simply faithful through our fears. Third and finally, God receives his return on investment. God receives his return on investment. Philanthropists, they give money just to be a blessing. And God is a philanthropist. Grace is his currency. And I am so grateful that God is a philanthropist because I am burning through more than my fair share of grace. God is a philanthropist, but God is not simply a philanthropist. God is also a venture capitalist. And like a good venture capitalist, God invests because he desires to have a return on his investment. And you know what that ROI is? It's that God would be made more famous. It's that his glory would increase. It's that his fame would be amplified. It's that more of us would be able to fill in the blank, God is blank, with adjectives we never believed before. God is faithful. He's generous. He's good. He's forgiving. He's loving. A lot of people say, hey, Crossroads, reach out. You're all about going and being the church and being a blessing. You're all about breaking cycles of generational poverty or helping release people in oppression to freedom. And I say, yeah, absolutely, we're all about that. We're also equally, though, about having our lives changed in the process of serving people in need. See, we often think we're going to go and fix people, but God uses them to fix us. And so we're all about that collision. But the whole reason we are about that collision is so that God would be made more famous. That's the whole reason we do this. Now, when we are faithful to invest what God has invested in us, God's glory increases. And this is true of this Old Testament character named Rahab. Fast forward to the New Testament of the Bible. we see in the book of Matthew, one of the authorized biographies of Jesus' life, his family tree is listed. 47 people are listed. Of those 47, only 4 are women. And one of those women, a Canaanite prostitute named Rahab. Hebrews chapter 11, many people consider that chapter to be the faith hall of fame. And it's like you're in Canton. You're roaming the hallowed halls of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You're seeing all these bronze busts in there of fantastic, faithful people. And in that faith hall of fame, Hebrews chapter 11, a Canaanite prostitute named Rahab. See, like a venture capitalist, God invests in the improbable. God is faithful through our fears, and God receives his return on investment. And absolutely, the single greatest example in my life about how God receives his return on investment has been CityLink. After CityLink opened, no one could say, oh, that was the result of some great strategic planning or some solid decision-making. No, people said, in spite of all the missteps that were done, in spite of all the improbability, God really showed off on that one. That was all God. And so the irony was thickest for me this past Thanksgiving. Now, keep in mind, we were voted down by city council 7 years ago, 8-1. And I and other CityLink leaders were invited down to City Hall this past Thanksgiving. We weren't really sure what we were going down there for. And when we get down there, we're presented by city council and the mayor this piece of paper. It's a proclamation that says, I therefore now declare November 13th, 2012 as CityLink Center Day in the city of Cincinnati. And I think, what? Hallelujah. Are you kidding me? And I remember walking out of City Hall and first of all laughing and thinking, I mean, look, it's got the raised gold seal. It's got the majestic purple ribbons. And I remember thinking, God, this is all you. This is all you. You did all of this. Do you know that Cincinnati was recently ranked as the 7th poorest city in the country? Nearly 30% of our residents live below the poverty line. Do you know that we're the 3rd poorest city in the country when it comes to childhood poverty? That's unacceptable. And here at CityLink, we're working hard to make a dent in that. And with a problem that big, it's going to take a while, but we're really proud of the results that we've had in our first 6 months of full operation. And I think here are some really encouraging stats to share with you about how God is receiving his return on investment from CityLink. You know, it's not just that Crossroads is involved. There are 20 other churches who have committed to providing volunteers and money to make CityLink successful. And we have a ton of volunteers. So far, we've had 324 volunteers serving in 27 different serving roles. They average 5 hours per week. That's a part-time job in my book. And a bunch of these people are you from Crossroads, but from other churches. Many of them are not affiliated with churches, and I love that. All told, combined, these volunteers have served a total of 7,176 volunteer hours. Isn't that incredible? It's amazing. And if you would like to volunteer, we would love to plug you in. Just go to citylinkcenter.org, and we will hook you up with a volunteer orientation. I think the best example, though, of how God is receiving his return on investment is from our clients. Now, some interesting statistics. 30% of our clients come from the urban core, 70% from greater Cincinnati. Many people don't know that. 53% of our people report no church home. And I love that fact because that means that when they walk in the doors of CityLink, they likely are receiving a tangible expression of God's love for the first time in their life. Isn't that great? But for people who do report a church home, Crossroads is the single greatest source of clients to CityLink. And I love that. For those of you who have been clients of CityLink, I want to say, well done. Way to go. By getting over any fears that you have had and going down, you've been tenacious in sticking through the program. We are proud of you. We are proud of you. And I'm so excited that you've done that. And if CityLink can help you or any of your friends, just give us a call. We would love to help you. Amen. But somebody's excited. But the biggest stat, the thing that I think most clearly reveals how God has received his return on investment through CityLink is that In our 6 short months of full operation, we have been able to serve 469 clients. Isn't that amazing? 469 clients. We're well on our way to serving 1,000 this year and many more in the future. And you know, all of these stats are great because they represent lives, but I think the single greatest way that we can help understand how God is receiving his return on his investment in CityLink is by watching this video. This is a video of a couple clients from CityLink named April and Sarah. And so let's take a look and see more about their story and how their friendship together has changed them.
I was down on my luck. It seemed like everything was going wrong. Every time I tried to get a job, they kept telling me that, "We're sorry, we can't hire you. You don't have a GED." I felt like I was lost, like I had nowhere to go. I was trying to find a job for a long time, and I set goals that just looked unreachable. Like, I didn't know where to go, nowhere to turn, because all the resources that I knew that was supposed to help you no longer help you. Like, the welfare office, they'll give you food stamps, but they won't help you get a job. And I didn't want to live off the government the rest of my life. I want to do something to better my life. I was falling over my feet, and I had no confidence. I lacked everything, and my health was failing me because I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about managing my money, saving things. I seen CityLink's grand opening on the news, and I immediately called and set up orientation. And I came for an orientation, and I met all the people, and I was like, wow, you know, I think I might like this place. I knew CityLink was for me. Something was just drawing me to it. Like, they offer everything. And when I called, I was kind of nervous about it. But once I walked in the door, it's like nothing but positive energy. The more I came back, the more I liked it. So I was encouraged to come back, and I stayed. First thing I did at CityLink Center was the GED ABLE program. GED was, like, one of my major goals. Like, I've been going to GED classes off and on until since I was 16. So that was like 14 years, and every time I just gave up myself. A lot of before, there was no one-on-one. I just felt like I had no motivation, no one cared. When I came to CityLink Center, the first person I encountered that really touched me was my counselor, Chanel. She told me about all the volunteer things that she did, and she really inspired me. Wendy from the Eve Center. She motivated me throughout everything. She taught me the Lord, and she gave me the force behind everything. They have an awesome teacher, Mr. Reeder, and he, like, literally will tell you, you know, you need to be here, and he'll help you with anything. He'll stay after class with you, and it's like he's willing to go that extra mile. I came to him many days. I can't do this. I'm not smart enough for this. He's like, you know this stuff. You're one of the top readers in my class. You read on a college level. If you can read that good, you can do anything. It's really positive energy, and it makes you want to come and want to learn. And I encountered a couple people like that was in my class that I really got close to. And I always talk to them when I come here, or I call them and make sure they're doing okay. And just people that'll be my lifelong friends. Every time she would meet, like, a stepping stone, I'd be like, wow, she's doing this, you know, I can do this. So I asked her, like, well, how do you do this? You know, how did you do that? She said, well, you can come to my house and I'll show you how to do this. And I'm like, really? She's like, yeah, I'll show you how to do everything. And I'm like, well, great, I'll be there, you know? So I started calling her and stalking her. And if she wouldn't show up to class, I'm on Facebook, where are you at? Or I'm calling her, like, you need to get over here and study. And
But she showed me how to do everything, how to go about taking my test, how to go pay for it, how to do certain problems I didn't know how to do, and she was right there for me. She's like, if I can do this, you can do this. And when I found out she passed her test, I was like, oh yes, I'm going to go do it. And I was so nervous. She was right there all the way through.
I thought I failed the test because, like, some of the questions I felt like I got wrong, and I was just second-guessing myself. I called the lady, and she told me, she said, I can't give you your results, but I can tell you, you need to celebrate. I was excited for that whole week. It was like the first goal, and I'm like, yeah, now I can conquer the world.
It was one of the most exciting days of my life. And then the praise that I got just from everyone here, clapping and telling me how proud of me they were and what am I doing next, and it gave me motivation to want to do more. It was great.
We're going to go through Fast Track together, and then we have plans to go to college. Hopefully we'll be in the same one. I told her we're going to be study buddies, and I honestly believe she's going to be my friend for life, you know, and I feel that we're going to have a long journey together.
I'm definitely going to college. That's my main motivation right now. And sky's the limit from there.
That's some ROI right there. Now, here's an update from a couple weeks ago when we filmed that video. Sarah, in the silver shirt, a week ago, she received a job offer, and on Monday, she had her first day on the job. Amazing. And it's an office job, one that previously she wouldn't have had access to had she not received her GED. So it's very, very cool. Now, don't be fooled. This is not about tooting our own horn about CityLink. Absolutely not. This is about tooting God's horn, because God is a venture capitalist. God invests in the improbable. He's faithful through our fears, and he receives his return on his investment. So now is the time you're probably thinking, all right, Tim, that all sounds good for you, for CityLink, maybe even for Sarah in April, but you don't know about me. You don't know how improbable I am. You don't know how I've struggled with an addiction for years, or how I'm in debt up to my eyeballs, or how I'm so career-focused that I'll step on anyone just to get there, or how I'll date any guy or girl who will sleep with me just because I'm afraid of being alone. You don't understand, Tim, how improbable I am. And I'd say, yeah, I do, because I'm that improbable also. A guy who still can struggle to be more interested in finding other people's approval rather than God's approval. I'm improbable too. I understand. But it's not just me that understands. God also understands. He invests in improbable people, improbable things like CityLink, improbable people like Rahab. If you've seen Shark Tank, you know at the start of one of those bits, the entrepreneurs come in, they're wide-eyed, but they frankly do look a bit improbable, and you're thinking, I don't know if this is going to ever take off. Until you see the sharks, the venture capitalists, go all in, and they offer not just their money, but they offer their experience, their connections, their advice. They offer a relationship. They say, I'm in this because I want this to be successful so that I will get a return on my investment. Whether you like it or not, you have an investor, you have a venture capitalist, and you can either choose to ignore him or you can choose to call on him for all of the resources he has at his disposal to offer you. I think the choice is really clear. And so I'd like to close our time with a little prayer exercise. I'd like to ask you to close your eyes and do something a bit uncomfortable. Open up your hands. This is the universal posture of receiving. And so we're going to pray here. We're going to ask God to make investments of capital in us. Father God, we come to you today, and many of us we feel overwhelmed. We feel exhausted. We have forgotten or never knew that you want to invest in us. And so God, we need you to make a deposit in our lives. God, some of us, we need relational capital. We have a marriage that's just barely hanging on, We have a strange relationship with our children. We are looking for friends who will encourage us in our faith because our current ones don't. Father, we need a relational investment. Would you please do that? God, others of us need physical capital. We need an investment because we just got that diagnosis and it's not good news. Or our friend did. Some of us are coming to realize that we worship our own bodies. Or we're at the other extreme and we haven't been taking care of ourselves. Some of us have addictions to sex, to alcohol, to shopping. God, make a physical investment in us. God, some of us need financial capital. We need to get a job. We need a better job. We need to get out of debt. Others of us want to stop making our savings account our God, and we want to make you God. Good Father, please make a financial investment in our lives. Others of us need an emotional investment. We're depressed, we're tired, we're ashamed. God, make that investment. And I know all of us need a spiritual investment of capital, God. We don't think you love us, or we forget that. We forget that you'll forgive us. When we compare ourselves to our friends, we can feel like a spiritual loser, a rookie. Many of us don't believe that you could ever draw that person we love into relationship with you, our spouse, our friend. Many of us don't believe you want a relationship with us. We need a spiritual investment of capital, God. Do that. God, we thank you that you're a venture capitalist. And thank you in advance that you're making these deposits in our life. We pray all these things according to the character of your Son, Jesus. Amen. Feels pretty good to ask God to make an investment in your life, doesn't it? And you know, you don't have to just do that in a Crossroads service. You can do that anytime, at home, at work. Now, venture capitalists will tell you, when they invest in an entrepreneur, they expect the entrepreneur to do some work and not just receive that investment. And so I want to challenge you this week to do one thing, to partner with God, with the investment that you've asked him to make in your life. Partner with him and do something different this week. See, God is a venture capitalist, and he wants to make an investment in you. Have a great week.